Coming up next on Tech News Weekly, Megan and I go hands-on with the newly announced OnePlus 5T. David Hewlett talks about recreating the 80s with visual effects. Omni is a service for sharing your unused stuff. And Black Friday deals, the good and the bad. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Weekly is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Weekly, Episode 7, recorded Thursday, November 16th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. If you want to save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
And by Grammarly. Download Grammarly, the intelligent writing app, for free by visiting getgrammarly.com/twit.
Well, hello. Welcome to Tech News Weekly.
Hey. How's it going?
It's going well. I'll tell you what this show is about if this is your first time here. If this is your first time here, welcome. This show is about the people making and breaking the tech news.
Which means that we're going to break some phones today, right?
No. We always make jokes about breaking. It's breaking the tech news, not breaking the tech things.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little bit less fun. But you know what? There's plenty of people on YouTube breaking things. Mm-hmm. We don't need to do that.
Yeah, go watch that if that's what you like.
Yeah, if that's what you like. But also watch this because we've got people breaking things, but not things, more news. Whatever. You get the picture. Before we get to talking to some people with some interviews today, as we normally do on this show, I thought we could take a close look at something that actually just was introduced today, a new phone that was launched this morning by OnePlus. You may have heard of it. This is the OnePlus 5T. This is the company's next flagship device and a pretty significant step up from their previous flagship release, the OnePlus 5, which was, by the way, released this June. And so I thought, hey, I have it. I mean, literally, the embargo lifted on this morning. I've got it in my hands, my right hand right here. So we could kind of take a look at it and see how it compares. And what is your iPhone doing in this screen? This is not that kind of segment, Megan.
If you want to pay twice as much, you could get this.
Well, yeah, so interesting. So go ahead and put that back because you will see. Here, let me get into this one. Ah, not centered. You'll see that the OnePlus 5, which was released back in June, not very long ago, but OnePlus likes to do this. They've done this the past couple of years. You can see the big bezels on the top and the bottom. You can also see the fingerprint down at the bottom. The OnePlus 5T, which they've now released, gets rid of that fingerprint reader down at the bottom. They're going for the trend of bezel-less or bezel-light, I would say, in the case of this device, because you still kind of have the top and bottom bezels. And then this device, I'm not sure what it's called or what it's running. It seems very foreign to me, is kind of like bezel-less, period.
Right.
So there you go. You've got that on us, Megan.
Yeah. I know. Well, I guess I was pointing it out because, I mean, everyone says, oh, the iPhone X is such a beautiful phone. But when you hold them up, they're all beautiful.
Yeah. They've all got a very nice, sleek kind of quality, all their own identity. There you go.
And that one is literally half the price of the iPhone X, right?
Yeah. And OnePlus has always been a pretty budget-minded, but not in the sense that the devices don't stand up to high-end premium devices. When they first started with the OnePlus One, I think it was somewhere around like less than $300. It was $299, exactly $1 less than $300. Now they've over the years their prices creeped up, and as such, you know, the devices like the OnePlus 5T here, this is going to be $499 when it launches. I think the official starting date on this is November 21st. So OnePlus's prices have definitely been creeping up, but that's still half of what you would spend on an iPhone X, half of what you would spend on a Galaxy Note 8. And it's really just continues to be the story that, like, yeah, you could spend all that money on a premium flagship phone. You could spend half that and still get a pretty dang nice phone.
That's so what are you getting in there? I mean,
in the OnePlus 5T, so obviously, you know, design wise, you're getting a little bit different of a story compared to the OnePlus 5 that launched not too long ago. That fingerprint reader has moved to the back. And personally, from my experience, that's probably my favorite place to have a fingerprint reader. They've also included something new on here, which is a facial recognition for entry, which I'm assuming, because I haven't had a chance to really dive into it yet, is a lot less technical than what iPhone X is doing. They, you know, on the iPhone X, they've got a whole bevy of different sensors up there to do that securely. This is probably less of that. It's using the front-facing camera. So, you know, it's maybe not the most secure. But being that you have the fingerprint sensor on the back and have that activated, that would be one extra way to kind of save yourself if it's sitting on the table or whatever. The display is now a 6-inch OLED. It's a Samsung OLED, so a high quality display, especially when you compare it to like the LG V series and the Pixel 2, which a lot of people have complained about that display on the Pixel 2 XL. But it's a 6-inch OLED versus the 5.5-inch on the OnePlus 5. Sorry, I'm getting a little glare there. But the body, as you can see, the design of the body is roughly the same. So basically what that means is you get a taller aspect ratio on the display. You get more display, more screen real estate in the same size and same overall, for the most part, same feeling design of the two phones. And I got to say, it feels pretty great. They've apparently redesigned the dual camera setup in the back to allow for better low light performance. Again, I've only had this open for like an hour or two, so I haven't had a chance to really play around with that. And then they have this thing that you might not have heard of before. Maybe you've forgotten about it. It's this little hole down here.
What is that hole for?
It's for plugging in headphones. If what you have is like most headphones on earth, yeah, you can just plug them right into there.
So no bezels, but yes, headphone.
Yeah, they're sticking to it.
That's really interesting.
I'd be surprised if the headphone jack sticks around, but they seem to be sticking to their guns. Wouldn't be surprised if like the OnePlus 6, whenever that happens, total guess, but you know, it seems like they're all kind of moving in that direction. This is USB-C down here, which very commonly on Android devices, if they get rid of the standard headphone jack, you'll see a USB-C port down there, and that's what they're channeling the audio through. So it's available in all sorts of colors. If your favorite color is black, it's just this color, like at least at launch. But it's kind of a nice phone. It is shipping with Android 7.1. That's Nougat right out of the gate. They have promised Oreo, but we don't know when that's going to happen. So that's maybe a little disappointing launching this late. You know, we're a couple of months already into Oreo. It would be nice to see that at launch, but apparently that's going to happen at a later time. Still has a 3,300 milliamp hour battery, Snapdragon 835 processor, two configurations. You can get a 6 gig memory with 64 gigs of storage for $499, or an 8 gig with 128 gigs of storage for $559. So that's the OnePlus 5T.
Kika in the chat room wants to know if it works on Verizon, because I guess the OnePlus 5.
I'm guessing that it doesn't. I'm frantically Googling because I did not look that up. I'm really pretty sure that this does not, and my quick Google searching is showing me that it probably does not. Yeah, and if the other one did not, if the 5 did not, I wouldn't be surprised that they haven't really changed the antennas inside to make it work on Verizon. So I wouldn't hold your breath on that one.
I'm going to take a picture.
Okay.
And then we can see what the pictures look like from the iPhone.
Okay. Oh, and you took I see. Nice.
So
here, go ahead and show this. And
well,
one,
when you're looking, uh-huh. When you're not. But, I mean, I don't think they're that. I don't know. My eye can't tell like one is significant. I actually think that the OnePlus looks good.
Because it's bigger?
Well, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, it has a little bit better color representation. Like it's a little less washed out up there, but that could just be the angle of the camera and the lights. This looks a little greener almost too. This looks a little more natural. I can't wait to play around with it. I'm going to be definitely spending some time with the OnePlus 5T, and a lot of people are talking about it today. We had it in studio, so we figured, why not show it off?
Yeah.
Do a little hands-on.
And I don't know if it really ever makes sense to compare Android phones to iPhones, because you're either in the Android ecosystem or you're in the iPhone ecosystem. And
absolutely.
There are certainly more expensive phones you can get you know, more expensive Android phones and less expensive iPhones.
You got a lot of options. That's the beauty of the smartphone world right now.
Ben writes, thanks for the story about YouTube Kids last week. I hadn't heard about that, but as the parent of kids who have figured out the Roku UI, it is relevant to my interests. My six-year-old is pretty sensitive, so even the kids' profile on Netflix can have some things we don't want her to watch unattended. Our solution has been that they're only allowed to watch the PBS Kids app when we're not with them. That way we know it's human-curated and educational. The worst thing that will happen is that they watch something annoying. I'm looking at you, Caillou.
Oh, Caillou.
We'll see how long it takes before they start breaking that rule. Of course, this is in reference to the YouTube Kids story that we talked about last week, where there were just some superheroes doing crazy things that might terrify a young child. And so, yeah, the PBS Kids app is curated.
Yeah, it's a great app that's only going to last for so long until the kids get a little bit older and YouTube is a force. Google did make some changes, I think, the day after we had that interview where they're demonetizing the abilities of those videos and they're allowing users to report them and remove those makers from the YouTube Kids app. So they're making adjustments. They realize that, some improper content has been appearing there. You still got to monitor it. You still got to watch because that's... It's the Wild West over in that YouTube world. Be careful.
After the break, deals editor from The Wire Cutter tells me whether I need another Amazon Echo. But first, let's thank our sponsor, Grasshopper. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase. They have an iOS and an Android app, and then callers can reach you wherever you are. And it comes right to your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. So when you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number, record a custom greeting, and then just add all the multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers, of course, are great for marketing. They make you look much more professional than just a regular old number. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding, and you can do that to any phone in the world. So wherever you are or wherever your employees are, they can get the calls they need to get on their phone. You can get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can send and receive text messages from your business number. Join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month, and you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit, and we thank Grasshopper for their support.
Real quick before we jump into the interview, you know how you heard my phone go off because someone left me a message? Apparently, it's really important. I just got this message. I want to read it to you because maybe you've heard of this. It says, it seems to be someone is trying to hijack your computer and tried to steal your personal information. If it's not fixed right away, then your computer will become obsolete. And all of your credential information may got compromised. If you are the one who is using Microsoft Windows in your computer, then please call then the number or press 1 to speak with security team now.
Oh my God,
please ignore it if we called you by mistake. Thanks.
Send your social security number right now.
Yeah, I think I'm out for the rest of this interview. Go ahead and take the interview.
Exactly.
I'm going to get in touch with the security pro.
Black Friday is only a week away, but already the deals are coming very fast. Joining us to talk about the best deals and the best tech products this season is Adam Burakowski, deals editor from The Wire Cutter. Welcome back to the show, Adam.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So the last time we talked to you, it was summer, and we chatted about ways to find deals on Amazon's deal day, that whatever they call it in the summer. They're like, let's make more money, make another Black Friday.
It's a new holiday.
What's new since last we talked?
Not too much, I guess, in the world of deals. On our side, you know, we've improved our page functionality. We've got a larger staff and more categories we're looking through. So, you know, on the Wire Cutter side, things are good. But in terms of holiday shopping, it's, you know, this is the big season. Amazon Prime Day is one thing in the summer, but now everyone's putting forward, you know, their best ads and their most of the best sales, but not necessarily all of the best sales of the year.
So you said that you guys scanned 55,000 deal listings, but you only found 262 that were actual deals. What were the other ones? Just fake deals? Were they, were they just things that weren't actually cheaper? They were just trying to convince you that of that?
More or less. You know, when you see those flyers around, like, say, Black Friday or even like Prime Day, other things like that, you'll see like 60 pages in Home Depot, you know, 60 pages of listings. There's no way most of that is going to be a deal. There's going to be a few select ones in there that are really good. They're really worthwhile. And that's kind of what we're talking about when we say like 55,000 deal listings, because we look through every retailer's flyers. And if every retailer is releasing 50 or 60 pages of deals, you're going to have just not that many that are really good.
And I assume you're comparing against the history of what these, you know, products kind of historically drop down to compared to what they say now is an amazing deal. You span that out over time and you actually track that information, you end up seeing, because I feel like I hear this all the time with Black Friday. People go nuts about these, you know, if it has sale next to it, it's kind of easy to assume that, oh, wow, this is a really great deal. You're right, I've never seen it that low. But then if you really were paying attention and tracking throughout the year, there are many times that it gets down that low or, you know, right around that area. It's just now they're marketing it all at the same time, so it's easier to get fooled by it.
Exactly. We track in a lot of different ways. We like Camel, for example, right. And there's Honey that a lot of people use. We have a lot of pricing data on the back end of our site, just how it tracks products that we link on the site. And we go to a lot of other sources to make sure we have accurate pricing history. And there's most deals you'll find they've been that price the year before. They might have been that price 2 months ago when you could have, you know, relaxed or used some kind of other rebate or discount or something like that to get an even cheaper price. But now, you know, you have 5 minutes to buy it. Are you going to buy it? It's that kind of pressure that isn't necessarily the most helpful for making good buying decisions.
Right.
So how do you look through all these deals and not buy everything all the time?
I've been doing this for a long time, and we've definitely, I've had that problem from time to time. Like, I bought a gaming keyboard on Prime Day. Did I need it? No, but, you know, I can play Legend of Zelda sounds on it, so I bought it. But I'm just so used to it now, and I really, aside from like the keyboard purchase, just like buying things I need. I do have to say, though, we hired on a couple of deals freelancers to help us with some of the November coverage, and they're having a difficult time of it already, you know?
I had a difficult time just researching this. I was like, oh my gosh, I do need another Amazon Echo. Because last time we talked, I had, it was more of a therapy session, you and I, Adam. I was asking if I really needed another Echo Dot, and you convinced me I didn't need one, and I still bought one. But now the new one I've learned on the wire cutter is only going to be $80 on Black Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be down $80. A bunch of people have it. It's, if I remember right, a little smaller than the main one. It has a better speaker. But that's, if you were looking for the Dot, it's not really the same market. Like, it's still way bigger than the Dot. Because I grabbed a Dot too, and I put it in my kitchen just for, like, you know, kitchen measurements, alarms, things like that. And I don't really know. The place I've got my Dot, the Echo would not fit even the smaller one. So...
yeah, it kind of seems like the home assistant category is going to be pretty big this year. I know I've seen listings that show the new Google Home Mini that's normally $50 dropping down to like $20 or $25, and then you get an additional $10 rebate, and that's like got a number of places that have advertised that. Pretty big gift for the holiday season, I imagine, of all of these that are kind of in that category.
I would think so. There's a lot of Echo deals. There's going to be a lot of Google deals. I know Microsoft just released their Cortana one. I can't remember the name of the actual speaker.
Is that the Harman Kardon one, maybe?
I think so. And a lot of other devices are getting the Alexa functionality. Yeah, so there's a lot of things. Everyone's, I guess, building those home, you know, smart home devices. Yeah. And I don't really know if the market's 100% ready, but it's getting there. Like, we've seen a lot of smart bulb deals, some crazy ones like... But the Hue set with four bulbs, white bulbs, but for $60, that's, and it comes with the hub, which normally the hub itself is around $50. So I can see a big push this holiday season for that.
Well, that was my question, because my addiction is Echo Dots. Jason's is Hue light bulbs. Are there deals just in the light bulbs? Because I spoke to someone else too, who already had a hub and didn't need a hub. But I saw in your list, there was only the light bulb, only the starter kit, which includes the hub, which you don't need if you already have them.
Yeah. I would be shocked if there weren't some kind of deals. I haven't heard of like any really good ones, though, you know, like impulse buy levels. I mean, we're definitely looking.
What about the difference between online deals and like doorbusters? Because I've never been the person that gets up super early on Black Friday and goes to wait in line and does the whole, you know, the scramble when the doors open or everything. I'm way lazier than that. I just want good deals online. Like, is that gap closing now? It seems like more and more we're getting great deals online and those doorbuster things are kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, I've only done it, the doorbuster thing, once, and that was like 10 years ago. What was that for? I can't even remember what it was for at this point, maybe a TV. You'll find the same sales online that you will offline. Just the only times I would say they're worthwhile offline, this is like really, really selective. If you want, say, a select TV or a select receiver, something high-end electronics that each store is maybe only getting a few of, and you happen to be first in line, great. You know, you have a higher chance getting that than the equivalent deal online, because we've seen a lot of TV deals from Amazon, like the best of the best ones. They sell out in a minute, tops. Mm-hmm. And if you have a blip in your internet connection, you just get unlucky, you're not going to get that. Whereas you would be guaranteed if you were early enough to get that offline. But then do you really want to spend, you know, 12 hours overnight in a line versus maybe losing out on a TV but spending 2 minutes at it, you know?
No, you don't. I'll answer that question for anyone. No. So, okay, maybe not anyone. I realize people have reasons that they do that, and I understand. But that just sounds like miserable.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. I was saying, plus we've seen a lot of the best deals online come back. So sometimes they'll go live early. Sometimes they'll go live on just Black Friday, but they'll come back for Cyber Monday. So even if you miss it once, you should still have a chance to get it again.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So what about coupon codes versus like actual deals? Like, I used to just search whenever I was buying something that I wanted to pay a little bit less for. I used to just search for the item plus coupon code. I'm finding less and less success having those actually work. What do you think about those coupon code sites?
There's a lot less coupon codes to deal with right now. You'll still get them for, say, like those USB battery packs that are really popular. Mm-hmm. Those companies that make those, they love coupon codes. But for most deals, electronics, video games, cameras, we almost never see any kind of worthwhile coupons. At best, eBay sometimes releases some strong coupons around the holiday season that are just like, take $25 off of $100. But those are usually open to all readers, and there'll be a limited time only. So they might only work for 3 hours or something like that. And they won't be on select products so much as select categories. So there's still coupons available in the online sphere, but they're way more rare than they used to be.
And what about, have you guys done any research into like emailing, asking for a lower price, especially for smaller companies?
As in the reader themselves emails the company?
Yes, like bargaining, just direct email bargaining. Hey, could I pay less for this?
You know, I've never tried it myself, but maybe if you're dealing with like an Etsy shop or something like that, you know, I don't know how that would go over. I don't have much experience there.
Okay. Well, I just ordered my holiday cards from a smaller place called Paper Culture, and they were great. Like, I kept deciding between Shutterfly and Paper Culture, and they gave me a 40% discount. And the next day, I got an email saying they were offering 50%. And I emailed them and said, could I have this? It was a discount they were already offering. Uh-huh. So it works sometimes.
Oh, if you're talking about like that kind of thing, yeah, I definitely think it's worth following up with companies, any companies, small companies, big companies that are giving additional discounts, since a lot of them are really friendly towards price matching slightly after the fact. Mm-hmm. And something else that a lot of people don't know, certain credit cards also offer post-purchase price protection. So Discover card for certain things, certain Chase cards, where if you see a lower price within, say, 90 days of your purchase, you can usually just make sure you get a screenshot or you post the receipt. You have some kind of proof that there was a lower price after your purchase and send it to them. And you have to make sure your credit card actually does this. I've gotten a lot of discounts that way as well.
So it's not, I should have called it by its proper name. price matching as opposed to just saying, please sell me this for less money.
Right.
Price matching or price protection, something like that.
I was like, call up Best Buy when you see a deal online and see how quickly they change it just because you want to spend less. Probably not. But if you see it somewhere else, a lot of times they will. It's worth checking on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you have an image of the flyer or something like that you can present to them, most of them will just go for it.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining us again. So if people want to follow all the deals on Black Friday, what's the best Twitter account for them to follow?
Wirecutter Deals.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam. Yeah,
it's been a pleasure.
Coming up, we'll have a chat with the star of Stargate Atlantis, David Hewlett, about what it takes to produce an 80s film in 2017. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by our sponsor, Grammarly. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. I have it running when I'm using my work email here, and you'll be surprised how often you're corrected because your grammar isn't quite right. And I love how it integrates and kind of embeds into the experience. It blends right in. It tells me when I need to make a correction, and it's always right in those corrections. I'm really happy that it's working for me. You can copy and paste any English text into Grammarly's online text editor or install Grammarly's free browser extension for Chrome, Safari, and Firefox. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. Grammarly scans your text as you're going in real time for common and complex grammatical mistakes, things like subject-verb agreement, modifier placement, comma splice, weak adjectives, missing articles, all sorts of corrections. Grammarly's powerful algorithms are developed by the world's leading linguists and language lovers. You can improve your skills with Grammarly's detailed explanations for all of your mistakes and weekly progress reports so you can kind of learn from your past mistakes and improve over time. Write confidently and mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else that you write on the web. And be sure to check out Grammarly's Facebook and Twitter accounts, and you'll get some fun grammar tips and discussions there as well. The Grammarly blog also offers daily tips and insights on how to improve your day-to-day writing to achieve personal and professional goals. You want to come across the right way the first time, this is the way to do it. Get started and join more than 10 million happy Grammarly Chrome users today. Download Grammarly now for free. Just go to getgrammarly.com/twit. That's getgrammarly.com/twit. And we thank Grammarly for their support of Tech News Weekly. The visual art technology company Red Giant has brought a lot of excitement to the industry with a number of products designed for filmmakers and visual effects artists to help sweeten their own creations, such as the case with the recent release of Universe 2.2, which is an update to Red Giant Universe that houses the company's stockpile of effects and tools for content creators. And along with the release of those new tools came a Red Giant film, and we have the actor from the short film with us, none other than David Hewlett. Welcome back to the network, David.
Thank you much. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to get you back. It's been a little while.
I looked at my Skype. I think it's been like a year.
Dang it. Well, that's wrong, and I'm happy to have you back. So you have a short film that you produced with the folks with these awesome tools here called Hewlogram that showcases the capabilities of the suite. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved in this.
Huh. I mean, you're flattering me by saying producing, because it was actually produced by an amazing guy called Egan Vogelson, I believe it is. I never get his name right. But and Aaron was the guy who's the brains behind the whole operation. But I know you probably find this hard to believe, but I'm a bit of a nerd. And
okay.
I love visual effects. I grew up on sort of 80s movies and television and Doctor Who. And those were, I just loved that whole aspect of the filmmaking process. In fact, that's sort of what dragged me in as much as the acting. And so I'm always looking for new stuff. And I see a huge split between how things are being made in the film industry and then what's happening in sort of the indie world where people on the internet and short films and really indie films are being made. And there's this huge difference where in the Hollywood world, there's all this sort of jargon and this is the dark arts of visual effects. And then in the indie world, there are people who are writing, directing, doing all the VFX, doing like Aaron did on this. And I found their short films and was so impressed with them. I didn't even realize they were like ads. I thought they were just great short films. And then I got in touch with Aaron and said, well, I literally tweeted him. I think I said, I will act for software. and he, true to his word, he got me a bunch of the software. I started playing with it. And when the film came up, he wanted me to do some green screen shooting, like just do some stuff in my basement, because God forbid I should leave my basement. And I said, well, why not? Like, New York's not that far away. Why don't I just come down and we'll come and do it? And we did. And I'm just, God, it's why I got into filmmaking, this kind of stuff, because it's just a bunch of nerds, film nerds who love doing this stuff. And they're all there because they want to be there, not because they're trying to, you know, it's you forget when you're acting for as long as I've been doing that it's not a business.
Yeah.
You got into it because you love doing it.
Right.
And this mix of technology and art and just passion is just so, it's like a full recharge, basically.
Nice.
So when I first saw this, was unaware. I read the email wrong recommending it to me. I thought it was an actual series, like Stranger Things. Am I the only one that made this mistake? Because I was very sad to find out that it was just a fake trailer. Have people asked you? Have they been clamoring at your door for a real series? Or do I have to come there and ask for it myself?
If you could, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. it's funny. A lot of people brought it up. It's just such a... I mean, my father was very confused by it. He just couldn't figure out. He's like, well, why would you make it look so old? But this is what we grew up on. Like, I wasn't, I wasn't an Automan fan. I didn't really know the show that well until Aaron introduced me to it. You know, it was Knight Rider and mm-hmm. Doctor Who and all, you know, the 80s, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s are these fantastically cheesy, fun science fiction like V and Martian Chronicles, all this kind of stuff that came out then that I remember. And then Knight Rider, of course, Knight Rider, Airwolf, there's just so many fun, cheesy shows that came out there. And this is, I think you walk a fine line with this stuff because you want to appreciate it, but you want to mock it, but at the same time, you don't want to lose that love of it. And I think Aaron just walked that perfect balance of both sort of, you know, awe and love of what he was making, and also just sort of making fun of it, given where it is now. The idea of like, that's what computers look like, reel to reel tape machines. You know, that's what. And I just love that my character is still just like, oh, the magical mystery of computers.
Is Aaron an actor too? That's Aaron that we're looking at in the film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he also an actor?
Aaron is not an actor. He was really, really nervous about it.
He was great.
He's amazing. They're all amazing. This is the thing is, I fell in love with it, not just because of the movies or even the software. It's almost like a community. There's all like, yeah. You know, this film wouldn't have happened if Aaron didn't, you know, first off, love the 80s, but also if he didn't know all these people. Like, he's got this fantastic sort of community of people who will help out with different things that they're good at. And so some of them are better at, different aspects of the filmmaking process. Some are better at the 3D design. Some are better at the compositing stuff. And they love doing it. And they all love, I mean, it's almost impossible to not love Aaron too. Like Aaron, literally, I met him. I'd never met him in real life before. I'd only talked to him via email and some internet chatting. And we're in the elevators, me, my son, and my wife. And when this elevator grew up to this odd little studio that they were shooting in, I suddenly turned to my wife and I said, you know, I've never met him. Like, he could meet us with like a running chainsaw. I've never met this guy. So my son sort of blanched right away. He was terrified. But Aaron sort of walked out of the office and we literally finished a conversation we were having. I forgot to introduce myself. Like, it was just, you know, we're playing with puppets and I got this sausage blue suit on and it was just like, oh, yeah, just, you know. It's another day with Aaron.
It's another day at Red Giant.
That's it.
I'm also a kid of the 80s, so I've really kind of synced pretty closely to the visual aspects of this and getting that right, which is not a very easy thing to do. I feel like so often, like going back in time and trying to recreate the visual aesthetic of a time that, you know, that is so obviously in the past is very difficult. At the time, I'm sure it was high tech, but now reproducing it with modern tools, like, it's possible, but I feel like we've tried this before and it hasn't worked. Why do you think now it's so easy to do? Like, it's been so democratized thanks to Red Giant and their tools here. I mean, what was it like kind of filming with that aesthetic in mind?
It's amazing to me how immediate this stuff is now, in that you can get a really good sense of what works and doesn't work. And it was, I mean, again, I didn't have to deal with this stuff. This is our own, like, entirely. And, you know, originally we tried some special material that would reflect the light in the right way and try to go for those, because it was, all of these were like practical and rotoscope effects, like really time consuming stuff. And, you know, we wouldn't be that crazy. So we, you know, we ended up trying to sort of, like, you're almost trying to, like, cheapen up the materials that you're, that you, I mean, you can do this so well, you know, you can make this stuff seamless. The idea is not to make it seamless and to somehow come up. So there's a million different tests. And one of the other things I love about the Red Giant guys is all of the behind the scenes stuff. Like, I mean, if you can get over me in the sausage suit, there's so much information about how they make this stuff happen. Like, they're completely transparent about stuff. They'll say, like, oh, that didn't work, this worked better, try this. They're also, you know, they support other people as well. So they'll talk about, you know, Video Copilot, who's another amazing site for this kind of stuff. You know, they'll, you know, send out, you know, they'll call out to various different other VFX people who've done stuff before. And they're just incredibly sharing with this stuff, because, again, they just, you know, it's like a rising tide raises all boats. They figure, like, if we get better at this stuff, then the film's going to get better. They're going to have more fun. They're going to have more work. You know, so it's really Aaron. I mean, you should talk to him about the specifics, but I know he did a number of tests. I kept getting sent sort of different, like, shoes and things that he'd done different effects on, or different people had tried things on. And then eventually they settled on the one that they went with. And it's just, again, it's got this beautiful kind of, like, yeah, there's the original base, you know, versus the new one. And yeah. So I would get things like, yeah, I'd get like a Wellington boot with glowing stars on it sent to me, and you'd go, like, what do you think of this? And I'm like, it's great. You know, so, like, he just had so much fun with it too. Yeah. It's hard not to get sort of wrapped up in that stuff. Like, when you're working with people who, I love that he put a parental. We did those tests, and my wife said, "You just I'm not going to New York and having you run around like that. You can't do that. It's just, the mystery is gone." And I think I even put a rolled up sock in there the first time. And eventually I said, "Look, I think we're going to need a cup of some sort." You know, it was like our first conversation. I'm sorry, the sausage is obscene.
Yeah. So, now the mystery really is gone.
That is, yeah, I've killed the mystery. Yeah. But I still wear the socks, so, you know.
Okay. Speaking of embarrassing people, I read that you volunteer at your son's middle school PC club, and I was curious: do these middle schoolers know who you are, or do you just go on the down low, and or do you, like, slip them links of your old YouTube videos?
I'm shameless in that I tell them, I like, no, you don't understand, like, I'm basically famous. They could care less. Now, so what I've started doing is, like, now talking to every YouTuber I could possibly meet, because then that's where my credibility comes in,
right?
Yeah. They could care less about Planet of the Apes or Stargate or any of that kind of stuff. Like, nah, whatever, Guillermo del Toro, yeah, big deal. We got, you know, but, you know Diamond, you know Dan TDM or Stampy or so that's, you know, and the PC club is just, the PC club is just because as a kid, I used to just love tearing stuff apart and always thought that I was a bit of a failure because I could only take them apart. I couldn't put them back together again. Right. It turns out I was a failure, but I also in the process learned what all these things did. And so I see kids who aren't as sort of, they aren't necessarily the top 10% geniuses in the class, loving this stuff because they're learning by destroying stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're breaking stuff. We've got some robotic arms. We've got some, I'm trying to get some people to print out some prosthetic arm stuff for us, because one of the kids has a partially formed arm. and she loves programming now. So I want to give her something that she can actually make, you know, do something,
that's awesome.
You know, some rude gestures or something. And we call them the tech terrors. So I'm hoping that they'll live up to their name.
Oh, that's amazing. I bet their parent, if they tell their parents, which my experience with middle schoolers is I get no information from my kids when they come home, but if they tell them, their parents would know who you are. So if they ever find out, they're going to be really mad that they weren't invited to class.
There's one mom who keeps saying, "Good morning, Dr. McKay," to me. And I keep saying, like, it's just David. David's fine. You know, awesome. I'm not a doctor. I'm scared someone's going to, like, you know, choke or something. They're going to come running. Well, you're a doctor. Only on television.
I played one on TV. Tell us a little bit about The Shape of Water. You mentioned Guillermo del Toro, awesome director, by the way. Tell us a little bit about this project.
Again, another one of those. I've been really lucky of late in that I have this sort of love-hate relationship with the film industry where, you know, if I could just do it without money, it would just be so great. But you have to earn a living and you have to work. And this Guillermo project came up and I was like, oh, great. You know, add that to the resume. That'll be amazing. You know, you put Guillermo on there. I'm sure that'll help me get some parts. And I was really I didn't realize how jaded I was until I got in there and we started doing rehearsals and he started like, you know, he would say, "What do you think?" And you'd be like, "What? You're the guy. I'm just an actor." He's so inclusive. He's so excited about this stuff. He's such a nerd. Like, he's a total film nerd. And so you just sit there just talking about comic books. And he sort of reconnected me with this idea of doing it because you love doing it. Like, why else would you do it? Like, he truly doesn't understand. And maybe this is like a, you know, he always refers to his, sort of his Mexican heritage and stuff. Maybe it's a cultural thing, but he's like, why? If, you know, unless it's something you would die without making, why would you make it? I was like, well, money? He's like, money. Like, he's just an amazing, wonderful guy. And he's one of those people who makes you feel like you are their best friend. And yet he's best friends with everybody and it doesn't bother you. I haven't drawn since I was 10 years old, probably. I haven't done any. I used to doodle and do little comic books and stuff. Awful ones, I should add. But I picked up a book and started drawing again just because of working on his film. Because as he said, it's not about, you know, doing it right for other people. It's about doing it because you like doing it.
Right.
Like, what's, you know, why stop doing something because you're not professional quality or whatever. So luckily he didn't say that about my acting. So
right on. That's awesome. So The Shape of Water, I believe that comes out next month, right?
I think it's next month. Yeah. And it's doing, I mean, I haven't seen a bad review. I'm sure someone will find one for me now, but it's just this lovely movie, especially nowadays. It's such a great film about, about a group of people who don't fit in banding together to help someone achieve what they want. I mean, and that said, my initial pitch for it was, I said, well, it's basically like a woman who falls in love with a creature from the Black Lagoon, you know, as one would.
As you do.
Yeah.
It makes a whole lot of sense.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, David Hewlett, it's always a pleasure getting the chance to chat with you and kind of catch up with everything that you've got going on because you've got a fun life, it sounds like. where do you want people to go to find more information about what you're doing? I guess upgraderequired.org?
Yeah, upgraderequired.org would be great. Yeah, that's the latest thing I'm working on now, sort of a Mythbusters-style quest to render disabilities obsolete through technology. So some crazy fun inventions for people with disability related issues. And I'm hoping to have some fun with that and maybe even, you know, start like a bit of a movement with it. So could be kind of fun.
That's awesome, David. we really appreciate you taking time and best of luck with everything. Best of luck next month with the movie release. Awesome.
Thank
stuff.
You so much, guys. Yeah, whenever. I love Twit. So, you know, you name it. Time and place, I'm there. Thanks, all guys.
Right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you soon, David.
Cheers.
So most of us, Jason, have too much stuff. And yet, as I said earlier, we continue to acquire more if there's a deal. But what if the so-called sharing economy would help you share more than just your car or your house and let you share all that stuff that you keep around just because you might need it someday? Tom McLeod is an entrepreneur who is making that idea become a reality. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good. Thanks so much for coming on. So I signed up for your service, Omni. I put in search. I want to borrow someone's Christmas tree because I'm thinking of buying a fake Christmas tree this year. But I don't know. I didn't find any trees, but I did find your tree stand that you are willing to rent to me for $1 a day for the entire season. There it is.
There it is.
Unfortunately,
it's a beaut.
You're not available. It's not available in my area. So
are you? We'll make it happen.
you'll bring it to me.
I'll drive it to you.
Okay. So my first big question is, why aren't you using your tree stand?
Yeah, you know what? That tree stand has moved with me through 3 apartments, and through startup life, each apartment has been smaller than the last. And we are definitely now on the tabletop Christmas tree level. But one day, I plan on having a place that I can put a real tree in it again. And in the interim, I'd like to make a little money off it, if humanly possible, renting it to people with more luxurious lives than my own, full evergreens flowing through their holiday seasons, you know?
So that's how it works. If you have stuff that you keep around optimistically, or just because you can't part with it, or for whatever reason, and then people can just share it, and then other people can rent it?
So there's multiple reasons, right? So, you know, the way in for the vast majority of people has always been storage. So you have this set of golf clubs, you have extra strollers that you're not using because your kid has outgrown it, but you're going to keep it for a while. You have a drone, you have a boosted board, you have all these things that you've purchased that you don't get to use on a daily basis, camping equipment. And suddenly, instead of it just sitting in your closet collecting dust on the 50 weeks a year you're not using it, you can actually recoup some of that value by renting it or even sharing it with your friends. So you have the ability to turn, you know, what was just, capital sunk loss only being used during the time that you're using it into this amazing opportunity to both help people out. So suddenly people who can't afford a really nice tent have access to things for the time when they need it. And you also are making some of the money back by supporting your community and really being a small entrepreneur, right? You're running your own little business with the things that you've purchased.
But people are very protective of their things, especially like, I'm watching this stuff on the screen while you were talking. And I see a guitar there. It'd be very, very hard for me to say, here, have my guitar. From a liability standpoint, how do you work that? Because these are people lending their things to other people that they don't know and trusting that those people are going to treat it well and that they're going to get it back in the same condition that they lent it out at.
So you know what? I always tell people that's our business. That's what we do. So we insure every item. So, you know, if it goes out and it doesn't come back the same way it does, we either seek to repair it or we'll refund you the capital that you've lost and we'll charge the person who damaged it. We've built out an entire ecosystem around, you know, making sure the stuff that you care about comes to Omni and returns to you in the same way, regardless of if it's been rented or borrowed or in any way stored with us differently than you would store it your own. So, you know, trust is the number one thing for us. And by that, we've created all these different levers to make sure that happens. Every item is inspected on its way out. It's inspected on its way in. The nature of the product, the way we store things on an individual item basis, means that we're taking different photos of each thing. We have this sort of idea of what does it look like now? What will it look like later? And so hopefully, by all the effort and time we've put into everything, you guys get this sense of trust from it. And that's why it's seamless. You know, we pick up your stuff and suddenly when, you know, you're making passive income and it's all covered.
Hmm. So where is it available now? Where can people use it?
So we're live in pretty much the whole peninsula side of the Bay Area. So from Berkeley all the way through San Francisco down to Stanford, we have full access to Omni and all the things that are contained within for anyone in that area. And you can get stuff as soon as 2 hours. You can have a surfboard delivered to Ocean Beach. You can have a picnic basket delivered to Dolores Park. You can have a Nintendo 64 delivered to Stanford if you want to have a retro gaming weekend. We service the whole area.
So you got to get a little further north. We're about an hour further north of San Francisco. Is the idea to keep growing?
The idea is definitely to keep growing. Okay. We're definitely not stopping.
Okay. That was kind of a silly question. Yes.
Yeah, totally. I think we've actually focused on growing throughout the Bay Area first. We're starting to look at multiple market expansion for 2018. So, you know, maybe not just the Bay Area. Keep growing through here, but also starting to look at what other cities that we can launch in. Hopefully, by the time people start seeing more of me and more of Omni, we'll be available everywhere.
Well, and it seems like from what I understand, it's like a storage service essentially. But because you're storing, like, do you have to share if people are storing with you, or is that an optional thing?
It's completely optional. You know, we have, think of it almost like privacy on your social media. You can have your stuff as private by default. We don't expose your things. No one knows what your stuff is. You can then choose to say, you know, I'd like to have a friend have access to my stuff, or I'd like to make money and have anyone have access to it. On each one of those levels, it unlocks more protections for you, more insurance, and the availability to have those things meet you where you want. But by default, you know, you put your bike in, your bike is just yours. No one else knows about it. We think the big dream, big vision is that, you know, having access to those things beyond just yourself makes it just a more valuable experience.
Yeah. It seems like a great idea too, if you're thinking of buying something. I mean, we test tons of products here. Like, and I just always am thankful. Like, you know, we send it back and I can decide whether I would really want to buy it for myself or not. But I realize most people don't have that option. Do a lot of people use it that way to decide whether they're going to buy something?
Totally. We actually have a section set up when you first open the app. It's sort of like an Instagram style discovery feed now. And one of the sections is try before you buy. And we have, you know, things like boosted boards and drones and all these little ideas that you might want to test out. Electric bikes. There's something called a Karmic bike and a Faraday bike that are both in there. These electric bikes that you can try. And we literally have identified people using them in that way. I see you right there. You can click on it. It's the center one. In that try before you buy section, you can try all those different things there. So you want to try out that Super Nintendo classic. You want to try out a camping stove that you might want to test out. You want to see if you want to actually learn guitar. Try before you buy is one of the most popular reasons people are using the service right now.
I see a Nintendo 64. You weren't lying.
I wasn't kidding.
I didn't see it. Maybe I didn't look deep enough, but I didn't see any clothes. Is clothes something that people share and rent?
There's quite a few clothes, okay. Actually. Yeah. By volume, clothes are the largest amount of things we have in the whole system. It's slower to move into the rental marketplace. I think there's a lot of things that we have to do as a business to really handle clothes elegantly. But there's things there, from accessories like handbags and shoes to jackets and coats, and specifically apparel around items that you might use. So snow gear, yeah. Clothing around, you know, it's like swimsuit type stuff for surfing. So like a wetsuit, all those types of things are in there. And we're growing the supply every day for anything you want. Over the time, I think you could use us sort of like you'd use a Rent the Runway.
Huh, interesting. I'm curious to know, in your time doing this, kind of like, is it an open, wide open category? I mean, obviously there are probably elements, things that cannot be shared through your terms of service, but are there things that kind of blew you away that there was actually a market for this thing that somebody had that somebody else actually wanted?
You know, I think we're surprised every day. I think the kind of the beauty of Omni is there's these things that you kind of expect, right? We knew that people would rent bikes. We knew that people would rent surfboards. We knew that people would rent camping equipment. But, you know, there's a chocolate fountain that you can see in there that gets rented quite a bit. And I think there's going to be this long tail, just set of things that are just, ooh, I didn't think I was going to need that, but I'm throwing this party and a chocolate fountain would be pretty fun.
Right.
We're seeing chairs. Like, I see a chair on that page. A lot of people, if you're living in small apartments, like, and you want to throw a little dinner party, you only have two chairs. Suddenly you have six chairs that you can rent a few for the day and you send them right back. So there's these things that are just kind of unexpected. I see on that screen right there, I have a couple extra ugly holiday sweaters.
Ooh.
The little gnomes.
Oh, that's a big one. Yeah.
I'm excited to see if someone rents one of those from me for there. I got a couple of my own, and that was one of my classics from last year. So, you know, pay it forward.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of great opportunity for things like that, that, you know, we weren't necessarily expecting, but it's cool to see because, you know, there's the diversity of things that you have in Omni that could potentially be used by other people is unmatched. No one, no world, no rental company has, you know, a chocolate fountains. it's just no one runs a chocolate fountain rental business. There's a couple bike rental companies, but yeah. That long tail of amazing things is really what sets us apart.
So I think that, yeah, you have a whole section devoted to Thanksgiving. There's tons of stuff. If you're in the, you know, peninsula, like extra chairs or blow up mattresses or, you know, things, you know, turkey, things you stick your turkey on. I'm sure it has an official name, but the oven rack, I guess.
Things you stick your turkey on.
Definitely. Okay. So if people are going to trust, you know, you to store all their stuff, and then I assume hire people to deliver it. It's not, you know, I don't have to deliver my stuff if I want to share it, right?
No. Yeah. You just hit a button on your phone. We show up to pick it up. We store it. We photograph it. We have everything done at our facility. We're in and out of your apartment in usually under 15 minutes. And then if you want to have it dropped off, it's the exact same process in reverse. You just pick a time, you tell us the place, and we drop it back off.
So, so there's a lot of trust. Tell people what you did before. Like, is this your first startup? How did you get here?
Sure. So this isn't my first rodeo. Before this, I've done a few things. I was in music for a little while. I was in content management systems, so for freelance web designs. Previously, right before this, I was building iPhone apps, so I launched quite a few, 17 to be exact. 11 of those didn't do very well. 6 did okay, and 2 did pretty decent numbers. So I've been in tech for a while, I'd say, just sort of working on the product distribution and launching side. But this is by far the biggest company I've ever started, and the most exciting, without a doubt.
Well, I will tell you that we get a lot of emails from people like, will you talk about my startup? Will you, talk? And most of the time I say no, but this was really interesting because I love this idea. Like, I love, environmentally speaking, what it can do for us. And thank you so much for talking to us about it, Tom. You. So Tom McLeod, hey, it's Omni. Where can people start sharing their stuff?
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Where should people go if they want to find out more?
You can just go to beomni.com and sign up right there, or you can search for Omni Storage and Access in the App Store.
Yeah, I definitely, you can't find it just by searching Omni. You have to, Omni Storage and Access.
And Access.
Yeah, the wonderful iOS App Store. It's impossible to find things. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And finally tonight, Andy Greenberg from Wired says the new service Amazon Key is not quite as secure as you thought it was. I'm not sure who thought it was secure, but okay. The service we talked about last week that gives delivery people access to your home so they can drop your packages off inside. Turns out it has a pretty big flaw. Security researchers have shown how anyone with a computer within Wi-Fi range can disable the Amazon Key security camera. And not in a way that just turns the camera off. The program can freeze the image so that for the person watching the camera, it looks like nothing's wrong, while the rogue delivery person steals your stuff or just sits on your couch to watch a little Netflix or maybe even lets your dog out.
Well, that's nice.
Well, depending on
whether... Maybe the dog wasn't supposed to get out.
Yeah, maybe not. Amazon responded to Wired saying every delivery driver passes an extensive background check, but they still plan to send out an automatic update to fix the flaw this week.
Yeah, my understanding of this wasn't that it could be done before anything happened. It was that when they go through and make the delivery and then on the way out, there's something that they can do based on the kind of handoff there to kind of intercept the end of that and then freeze it so that the door at that point is shut and then they can go back in. That was my understanding. Mm-hmm. In which case I was like, okay, well then it doesn't matter because you know who it was. You saw them go through before. If it's prior to that, it's an even bigger issue. But it sounds like Amazon's on the case.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the idea is not that you would that the person would come in and steal the TV. That maybe they would go in and look for your passwords,
look for other things,
see that list that you keep by your desk of all of your passwords, or you know, get a checkbook that had, you know, go through your files, get anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm assuming that anyone who really has a reason to protect their security or privacy would never use this service anyway. I think I've said before I wouldn't use it because my dog, but would not like anyone to come in. But, you know, I think there's always, I feel like anything, you know, Face ID, whatever you come up with, it's going to be crackable. And, Amazon's doing the best they can for a service like this.
I guess you have to kind of think of the implications of that technology, knowing that it's probably crackable to a certain degree. If the technology hinges around the idea that using this allows someone to come into your home, then consider that and consider what that might mean if, in fact, it was hacked. That means that now your home isn't as nearly as secure as you thought it was.
Yeah. I mean, home security is so funny, too, because, yeah. I mean, I feel like locks are really just a suggestion. You know, I would not like you to come into my home. Like, right. Really, like, you can break a window.
That's true.
Or,
there
you
are
know.
Ways in.
It's I'm not going to let Amazon, I'm not going to use Amazon Key, but I understand why someone might use it. Just be careful.
Yeah, just be careful out there. Tech News Weekly, we record live every Thursday around 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. You can be part of the show, as always, by emailing us at tnw@twit.tv. And if you want to find the show page, it's pretty easy to find. Just go to twit.tv/TNW for Tech News Weekly.
And now's the time where we ask you for some help. If you had a favorite segment, a favorite show of the year, or just a moment on Twit that you loved, we want to hear from you. We're putting together our best of episodes. Head over to twit.tv/best of. There's a little quick little form. Fill out whatever information you remember, and then you can be part of making these special shows that will air between Christmas and New Year's. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm Megan Maroney, and you can tell me all about where your passwords are so that I can come in your house and crack all your accounts.
Don't do that. It's a bad idea. Don't believe her.
We won't have an episode next week because we will be celebrating American Thanksgiving, but we will see you in 2 weeks.
I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our TD, Josh. Thanks to Patrick for helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Alex, who was hiding behind that TV. He may have disappeared.
Thanks for nothing, Alex.
Thanks for nothing, Alex. And thanks to you for watching. Oh, hi, Alex. It's nice to see you again. We'll see you all next week on another episode of Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody.